Welcome back to Innovation on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. And joining me at the in the studios here at the University of Sioux Falls is Kurt Griffin. He is the Director of Clinical Trials for the Sanford Project. And thanks for being here.
Thank you very much for having me.
So, type 1 diabetes. Your mission is to find a cure.
Indeed it is. And we're working very hard at it. And we have, I think, we've developed a very nice program where we have everything from very basic science to more what I focus on, which is clinical trials, and trying to really see what we can do about this disease. Right now, the standard of care is treatment with insulin, which keeps kids alive, keeps adults alive, but it doesn't take care of the underlying problem, which is autoimmunity, which is a much more complex problem. And that's where I think we really need to focus to really be able to change how we approach this start to finish.
So when you talk about the autoimmune disorders, I mean, there's a lot of things that fall into that spectrum, a lot of other diseases that fall into that spectrum as well. So will this research help further other autoimmune disorders?
Yeah, potentially. And we're trying to learn from other autoimmune disorders as well, too. And in fact, if you have one autoimmune disorder, that the immune system is supposed to be really good at fighting off infections, but leaving our own body alone. And any autoimmune disease, that's broken down. And if it breaks down for one thing, you're more likely to have a second autoimmune disease than you are to get the first one. And in type 1 diabetes, we see an association certainly with low thyroid. Mm-hmm. That's also autoimmune. Sometimes adrenal insufficiency and also celiac disease. But to answer your question, yes, if we're smart enough to learn how to dial the immune system in a little bit better, and we can do that for type 1 diabetes, it should have also applicability to these other diseases as well.
It'll have a ripple effect.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so, you know, 10 years ago, this gift from T. Denny Sanford launched this initiative to find the cure for type 1 diabetes. And so are there more than one kinds of studies happening to do this, or is there just that focus on the autoimmune disorders?
It is a little bit broader as well. Okay. We have some people working from the regenerative side. Mm-hmm. How do you take other cells and convince them to become beta cells that make insulin function like that? Or which could also extend to how do you take other cells from your own body, whether other parts of the pancreas or liver cells. People of other places are working on how do you convince those to become beta cells. That's something where people are starting to make more progress, but no matter how good you get at that, as soon as you put it back into a person with type 1 diabetes, their immune system is already primed to kill that exact type of cell, and it's really good at killing that type of cell. Hmm. So anything like that would have to come with some pretty heavy-duty immunosuppression, which has its own downsides. So whether it is trying to approach it first and foremost from attacking the autoimmunity or needing to tackle the autoimmunity in order to enable some of these other technologies to get a good foothold in the body, it's still going to be a rate-limiting step.
So focusing on the autoimmune, that's the your best shot.
I think that is a necessary shot. Mm-hmm. Is that going to be enough by itself? We don't know. Oh. There is kind of a big debate in the field as to how well these cells that make insulin, the beta cells, how well can they replicate? And there's some evidence that says they really don't after you hit puberty. And then there's some evidence that even people have had type 1 diabetes for 50 years. And when they pass on, they, as they say, donate their body to science. If you look, there's evidence that there's still cells trying to be beta cells, trying to divide, trying to grow, trying to make insulin, but they're still under attack. And that comes back to, you know, attacking the immune system. And then, you know, maybe we'll need to supplement from some other place with other cells or helping the ones that are there to regenerate. But still, the immune system is really the main barrier. And it's the underlying problem that starts the disease.
So you may have to do both.
Exactly.
You may have to alter the immune system and alter the beta cell.
And whether you want to look at that level or even tackling the immune system, it's not that simple, right?
It's complex. If only it was that simple.
Right. And what I mean by that is, let's take a look at other complex diseases where we've made some tremendous progress. So in my pediatric training, you know, even by the time I was a resident, childhood leukemia was basically curable. Whereas when I was a child, it wasn't. It was a death sentence. Right. You look at tuberculosis, that goes back even further, or more recently, HIV. These are all diseases that we can get a pretty good handle on now that were a real struggle to get to that point, precisely because single agents don't work. And what you need to do is have multiple approaches that attack the problem synergistically and minimize the side effects from any one of them, but really move forward and take care of the underlying problem. And that's something that even just as we tackle autoimmunity is something we're likely going to have to face as well, too. And the question now in the type 1 diabetes clinical trial community is, how do we actually figure out what are the right combinations and how can we actually test those in an efficient way that gets us there sooner?
So now take me to the trial that we're in right now.
All right. So we call it T-Rex. And, we work with kids, so the dinosaur association is kind of cute, but it's really regulatory T cells, which are called Tregs, expansion. And if I can walk you through just a little bit about the underlying principles, the part of the immune system that's actually killing off the beta cells are T lymphocytes. So they're white blood cells that are the part of the immune system that drive the attack. And when they fight an infection, that's great. After infection is over, you want them to stand down and kind of calm down. And part of that balancing system is another flavor of T lymphocytes called regulatory T cells. We call them Tregs. And most of us have kind of a balance, and we fight an infection, and the effector cells that drive the attack go up, and then the regulatory cells kick in and balance everything out to kind of, that's part of how most of us don't have autoimmunity. If you look at the kids with type 1 diabetes when they're diagnosed, they don't have as many of those regulatory T cells, and the ones they have don't work well. So what we're trying to do here is take enough blood from somebody who's recently diagnosed with diabetes who's still making some insulin. That's a window of opportunity here. Purify out just those regulatory T cells. They get shipped off to California to a very special clean room where they're grown in culture for 2 weeks, and we get billions of them back, and then we give them back to the same person they came from. So we're trying to fill that gap of, you know, what they didn't have enough of, they weren't working well. We now have the right number, and we hope, and they're working better. And what we're trying to do is see how well is this going to work.
So you have to find these patients right away. That's why you're only at 58 right now, right?
Right.
And 111 is your goal.
111
right?
is the goal. And the study is also now, the first 19 we did as a safety cohort, that was just here at Sanford and Sioux Falls and Sanford and Fargo. And once we pass that initial safety review, we've expanded. We now have 10 sites at other major diabetes centers across the country. So we're recruiting very well. Recruiting kids early onset is pretty, it just takes time, but it's doable. Some of the other studies, the FDA oftentimes wants us to start in adults first. And trying to find adults over 18 who are within 100 days of diagnosis of diabetes, that becomes a challenge.
Of type 1.
Of type 1.
Right.
Because it's a pediatric onset disease. Now, there are some adults who get it, but it's probably a different flavor of type 1. It's a much more gradual process. And I'm not sure that finding something that really works there is necessarily going to be as applicable to the kids. And I think really working in the pediatric population, which, you know, that's my passion, that's where we need to be.
And so the age requirement has lowered, right?
Right. Okay. And some of that is safety review, and some of that is also we're just getting better at starting with smaller amounts, because the smaller the kid, the less blood we can take without causing problems. So safety is always the first priority in one of these studies.
Well, how much blood do you need to take?
Well, from a big kid, a teenager, we would take the equivalent of a unit going to the blood bank. So, like a pint. And it's kind of done the same way. Big needle, big tube, goes to bag on the floor on a rocker. And it's actually been working remarkably well.
Because then that's what you...
That's the starting material.
Put back in, right?
That's the starting material to... Most of that is red cells. So you got to get rid of those.
Sure.
You're left with all the white cells. Probably 98% of those you don't want. And when they're shipped off to this facility in California, they actually go through a cell sorter where cell by cell, they're labeled fluorescent antibodies. They're actually sorted, and we get just exactly those individual cells that are Tregs. And that's very important, because after the expansion, what you get out depends on what you put in. So it has to be really pure going in. And then you grow them, and you have a whole batch of pure Tregs.
And then are you studying those Tregs and how they multiply or grow, or do they in your own body?
That's a whole separate question of how can we induce them inside the body?
Got another study for you.
No, okay. Absolutely. And, you know, so that's something that we're working on, again, some of my collaborators on the basic science side, like Dr. Alexei Savinov. We work pretty closely as far as, you know, he's still working on mice, but there are things that we hope to learn from that and bring additional things down the road into clinical trials.
Okay, so I'm a parent of a small child who's newly diagnosed, and the emotional part of it, how do you talk to them, those parents and those kids, to talk about this kind of study and to enroll?
Yeah, so I think you hit on something that a lot of people might not realize. You know, by the time you see the kid out in public and they're somewhat into routine. If you have a family that doesn't have this any knowledge ahead of time, it really does turn the whole family upside down. And first and foremost, we focus on how do we provide good clinical care. And unfortunately, we get a little too much practice at this, but we have a good team in the hospital that we bring people in and in the course of a couple of days teach them, you know, certainly the basics and how can we safely get you home. One of the really interesting things, though, is if a lot of the families that have particularly little kids with type 1, when they're first diagnosed, their first thing is, well, insulin's not good enough. What else can we do? So they're asking. They're already looking on the internet. They've found a lot of things. And particularly when we were starting the study and we were just open here in Sioux Falls and Fargo, we had families contacting us from all over the U.S., even some from Canada, that just became too logistically challenging. But so we have a number of patients that are coming from well out of state and fly here to specifically to be part of the study. Some families, certainly, you know, they're still trying to deal with the basics and they're not that interested, or they decide, you know, the potential risks and benefits aren't right. But a lot of families, this is a window of opportunity. They're still making some insulin. What can we do to preserve that? And they oftentimes come looking for us.
Hmm. So this is preserving, I mean, you catch them early. This is really preserving what their body's doing, but starting to falter a little bit or starting to decline?
So at least the textbooks they made me learn out of, the dogma is it's an autoimmune disease. You're killing off your beta cells, and it can probably kill off probably 80% of them without having major symptoms. And so by the time somebody comes in and is diagnosed, they're already past that point.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, if you can preserve that little bit, that makes it much easier, because if you can correct most of the way with insulin from the bottle, they can still do the fine-tuning. Whereas if you make their pancreas work harder and you're under-treating them, that helps it to burn out that much faster. So optimal treatment's important, but preserving that beta cell, that the residual function, really helps smooth things out. So that by itself would be a win. The other challenge we've run into is, and this is perhaps your unasked question, is, well, how come we don't do this earlier when they have more to work with? And that kind of comes down to, well, we're not that good at predicting who's going to get diabetes. There are some studies like Diabetes Trial Net where we're looking at family members of people with diabetes, where we're looking for antibodies, and there's a move to kind of redefine, you know, the onset of diabetes as well when you have multiple antibodies against some of these proteins that are related to type 1. But realistically, you know, we get to see kids when they're symptomatic, and that's when we can say, yes, you really have type 1 diabetes. We can justify the potential risks of beginning to try to rebalance the immune system, for example, or some of these other approaches.
Because how long do parents wait to bring in their child for a diagnosis? I mean, what are the symptoms that you need to look for? Let's go there.
Okay. So the symptoms, high blood sugar, it's kind of like salting a slug. It sucks the water out. And in this case, it's going out to the urine. So the kids start going to the bathroom more. You may have a kid that, you know, hasn't done it for years, but all of a sudden is wetting the bed again because, you know, they're also really tired and not sleeping, not waking up to go to the bathroom. Because they're losing water, they're drinking more. And we wind up, particularly this time of year, it becomes a little tricky because it's been kind of warm. I know I've been drinking a lot more, and I'm keeping myself hydrated, so I'm using the bathroom. Right. I don't think that's diabetes. and it's also very insidious in how it comes on. It comes on very slowly at the beginning, these symptoms. And it's something that parents will identify in retrospect and say, boy, I wish I had picked this up, you know, 2 weeks ago when he started doing this. If it progresses further, because the body can't burn the sugar, insulin is how sugar gets into the cells so the cells can burn it. Well, if you can't burn sugar, you're burning fats and proteins and you're accumulating keto acids. And eventually you wind up with high levels of acid in your body. You wind up vomiting because that's one way you get the stomach acid out and kind of get it out. And eventually you kind of get really lethargic and wind up in intensive care unit, which, you know, it'd be nice to catch people before that, certainly.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you're doing this study, and it's a blind study, right?
Correct.
So some get this and some don't. Yeah.
We actually have three arms.
Okay.
Because we're not even sure what is the right dose of cells. You know, if some is good, more is better, is too much, almost enough. So we have one third of the subjects will get a placebo, one third will get a lower dose of cells, and one third will get a higher dose. And, you know, a lot of times families say, well, if it's a placebo, I don't want them to have a placebo arm. Well, you know, the reason we do this is because we don't know. And we're trying to balance the potential risks and benefits. And I certainly hope we're not going to be in that camp, but there have been some other studies where actually the people who were in the placebo arm were the ones who did better. We have enough preliminary evidence. I don't think that's going to be the case here, but we want to be sure that there's not some downside that we do it. And then this really, having the placebo gives us a lot more power, statistical power, to be able to see a potential difference, if it's there, with a much smaller number of people. So we're actually, by including the placebo arm, we expose fewer people to risk.
And you are still treating all of the patients with insulin, correct?
Absolutely.
And managing
their
daily intake.
Yeah, and managing that insulin intensively and keeping them under the best control we can is, number one, standard of care. Number two, the best thing we can do for them. And number three, if we're not doing that, that affects how the study turns out. Because what we're looking at long-term for the ultimate outcome is, can we maintain that insulin production over the long term? And we know that if they're not controlled well with insulin, that's going to go away sooner. And that, you know, depending which arm they're in, can really confound what we do. So, but beyond being the best thing for the science and for the study, the most important thing is that's what's best for the kids.
So if you kind of restart the making of your own insulin with these T cells, do you use less insulin then? I mean, is that one of
the potentially
signs that you didn't get the placebo?
I don't know, because, you know, I've seen some kids that, you know, haven't been in a study where, you know, they're managed intensive and they can do really well for a long time. Mm-hmm. It depends how early they're picked up. It depends how well they're controlled. It depends on, you know, how revved up is that immune system. You know, and, you know, certainly if you're starting with 40% of your beta cells rather than 10%, you're going to do better.
And you're how far into this trial?
We're just past halfway as far as the number of kids that we've treated.
Okay. And they've been being treated how long?
So we started this study. The first patient we treated was back in March of 2016. We did the first 18, probably by August of last year, had a brief pause where we waited. It was pre-planned to do that many and then look at safety. And then starting really the beginning of this year is when we ramped up with more sites and started going. The treatment itself, right now, we're only doing one treatment. There's a lot of discussion amongst us as far as, you know, do we need to do more than one? Is one enough? Is two the right number? We don't have good information on that, and that's still to be ironed out.
So right now, it's just one time.
Just one, and then we follow them for 2 years.
And it's an injection.
Yeah, so the cells come back, and it's basically in an IV bag. It's a brown plastic bag, because the cells, if there are enough of them, will make it look cloudy. So we want to be able to see the liquid, but not tell whether it's cloudy or not. And then that just goes in as an IV drip and just kind of runs in over half an hour. And we watch them for, you know, a couple hours, just be sure everything's okay and knock on wood, everything has been. And then we monitor them and see how much insulin they make.
So you're going to have some preliminary results in the next few months, you think, that you'll
probably
be releasing?
Probably after the first of the year. So there's a scheduled interim analysis after the halfway patient has been treated for 6 months. Now, I want to be cautious and say I don't necessarily expect to see something big there, because the study, we figure out the statistical power is how do you figure out how many people do you need in the study in order to be able to see what you want to see. And it was studied, the power was calculated that we need 111 to see everything at a year. So if we're seeing half as many people and we're doing it for half the length of time. Even the people that are going down won't have as much time to drop in order to be able to see a difference between people that are dropping and people that aren't. So it's, I think, our first peek at the data, but even if it doesn't show something really big there, that's kind of what we expect in a way, mm-hmm. and it's still definitely, it leaves the door open for a big result at 1 year.
What does your gut tell you?
I try not to...
you don't go there, do
no,
you?
No, I don't.
You're a scientist.
I really... Because if I start thinking that way and I start thinking, well, who do I think is getting it and who do I think is on placebo? Number one, I've proven myself wrong on previous studies. And number two, that opens the door to, even if I really try, it's unconscious bias. Mm-hmm. And my obligation, if I'm asking all these families to come and participate in our studies, my obligation to them is to do it to the best of my ability and be sure that everything is done right. And we've done a lot to make this a really strong study. We're using exactly the same labs, exactly the same protocols as other similar studies, so we'll be able to compare the data. So we're really trying to think about this up front, and I don't want to jeopardize that, and I'm sorry.
Well, no, I mean, because it could cause you then to just make the data say what you believe, right? So
yeah.
you can't go there.
And even if I didn't want to, it's human nature.
Right.
And I'm smart enough to realize that I'm not above that.
So we continue. You continue to enroll more patients into the study, and you, over the next couple of years, then will have more of a complete set of data. Is that what's next?
Exactly. And this fits into, we're not doing this in isolation. There are other studies that are being looking at similar new onset type 1. We're the only one that is using a cell-based study or its treatment. Everybody else is using, you mentioned other autoimmune mm-hmm. diseases, trying to take typically from rheumatoid arthritis, some of the drugs that have been used there mm-hmm. for many years and down to kids and see, can we use that to change type 1 diabetes? So right now there are really three studies open for kids. T-Rex is kind of one. I think it's kind of the most exciting because it's cell-based therapy. And I'll admit I'm a little biased because we've been involved with it from the beginning mm-hmm. Here at Stanford. And then, when that study fills up, then we're looking for, we have a couple other studies that we partner with. So all of these studies have to be national in scope in order to get enough kids, because as you pointed out, it's hard to get them right in that window.
Right.
We play with Immune Tolerance Network and TrialNet. Their sites play with us. And it's kind of, I feel very fortunate. It's a very good supportive community and people play together pretty nicely. So when our study fills up, we'll still have those other ones going. Then we'll have another Stanford study that I'm working on developing right now that'll drop in and we can start recruiting again here for our own study.
All right. Well, I look forward to having you back and to talk more about this.
Well, I hope I have the opportunity soon. So thank you so much for having me.